No? Doug? No? Yeah. Chocolate from heaven. Hey, I'll take it. I'll do my best not to complain about it. Of course, I don't think I could ever get tired of chocolate. I'm a chocolate fiend of sorts. Anyhow, how is everyone tonight? Everybody good? Heard a lot of stuff announced. Hopefully nobody's suffering too terribly bad. So you got one for Mike there too, okay? You're welcome. Good evening. Any exciting news to share for the week? Anybody had any good things happen? Despite all the negative things that were talked about tonight. School's out. That may be good for some. I don't know if all the parents share in your joy there, Charlie. Oh, am I skipping you there, Weldon?
No.
Did I get you? All right. I'll let y'all fight over who gets the two. All right, Doug. David, did you get one? Huh? Did you get one? All right. Was anyone overlooked in the serving of the Wednesday evening communion of sorts? All right. Moving on then. Scheme of redemption. So the goals of our study: to learn how God moved from our problem of sin to His solution of Jesus on the cross. That's what the main thrust of our study is all about. To understand how everything in the Scripture relates to and points to Jesus and the cross. Okay. The idea here is that everything in this book here we call the Bible is it all has to do with our redemption. Okay, we messed up. We walked away from God. We were His, fully in His fellowship and His family. We walked away, realized that, oh no, we've made a horrible mistake. What can I do? And God said, you can't do anything. Only I can fix that problem. And He fixed it with His Son on the cross, and that's what this whole book is about. It is all about Jesus and the cross, and God revealing Himself to us, what He likes, what He doesn't like, why He had to do what He did, how He made it happen. So it's a big story. It all discusses the redeeming of mankind. And finally, to get a better understanding of how we got here tonight on the orange carpet. We haven't gotten into a whole lot of that yet, but we will eventually as we move into the tail end of our discussion. This thing we know is the church is a wonderful thing. It is a beautiful institution. It is a family. Okay, and we need to see each other that way. I heard somebody ask one time, you know, if we can't get along here, how are we going to get along in heaven? Yeah. Brothers and sisters fight, though, right? You know, I had a brother. He and I had some all-out screaming matches. We never laid a hand on one another in anger, as it were. Okay? We never exchanged punches or anything like that. We definitely raised our voices to one another in just sheer outrage at times. But Joey is easily my best friend on this earth today, and so I was very blessed to have a wonderful brother like that. But hey, we still got in our squabbles. You know, there were times I wanted to strangle him. You know, he's 5 years younger than me to the day. We share the same birthday, 5 years apart exactly. And I can assure you, there were times I wanted to strangle my 5 year younger brother. But that's what family does, right? Sometimes we fuss and we fight and all this.
Daughter and son bought houses and lived back to back to each other with a common gate.
Yeah.
All the time.
I kind of grew up that way. I grew up in there in Alabama, and where my house was completely surrounded by family land. So 100 yards on this side, I had my grandparents. 150 yards this way, I had my great-grandparents. The folks across the street, they weren't blood relatives, but they might as well have been. They're still living there to this day. Aunts and uncles just down the road, I grew up in a very similar situation, but yeah, thankfully we didn't have all that fussing and fighting. There were a couple times, but you know, but hey, that's what family does, right? We get into squabbles, we get into fusses and fights, but it's important, brethren, that we love one another and that we fix those things. And the Bible gives us ways to love. The Bible instructs us how to love. The Bible instructs us how to handle the squabbles and the disagreements and the fusses and fights, because we are family. That's what this church thing is all about. And one day we're all going to be living in our Father's house, okay? It's going to be more than just back-to-back sharing a gate, okay? We're going to be within the same doors, okay? We're going to all walk through the same door of our house, into God's house, our Father's house. And so it's important for us to understand that this thing we call the church is indeed the family of God. And we are citizens of that great kingdom that is to come, that we all look forward to. And so part of our study is to understand more about that, what it means to be God's family and what it means to be here tonight on this orange carpet. All right, so some of the main concepts. We've talked about the scheme of redemption is the plan of God established before creation to redeem mankind from sin, and to view the Bible as one book. You know, not just a compilation of 66 different books, but one book with 66 different chapters. Okay? And it's important we understand it from beginning to end. It's a big book. It's a lot of reading. I read through it once as a kid. I can tell you it was part of Lads to Leaders thing, so I will readily admit to you that I did not read it. Okay, it was in the beginning. I read it quickly. Okay, so, you know, it's a big book. There's a lot to take in. But it only makes sense if we read it from beginning to end, right? If we, you know, like I've said before, none of us go to the library, pick up a novel, and start jumping around in chapters. We don't open the book up to chapter 33 and read that one, and go back to chapter 5 and read that one, and over to chapter 53 and read that one. You can't make sense of a book that way. You'll be sitting here left scratching your head going, I have no idea who this character is. I don't know why he's doing what he's doing or why she's doing what she's doing. I have no idea how they ended up in this certain situation that is all the plot of the story. How did that happen? Well, to do that, you got to go back to the beginning and you got to read it through. The character of God, the same in that same concept, the character of God is not going to make any sense if we just pick it up over in Philippians. Even if we pick it up in Matthew. All right, to fully understand God, we got to go all the way back to the beginning and take it all in to learn all that we can about God. So we need to view the Bible as one book with 66 different chapters, and the real division taking place there at Genesis 3 and verse 6. It's there that sin enters the earth and ultimately just changes everything. Physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you name it. Everything changed. And I'm not talking about just a minor change. This was a drastic change. What you and I know of today is the latter half of that. We simply can't comprehend what the world of Genesis 1 and 2 was like. It's beyond our ability to take in. I've often described it as it was heaven materialized. It was perfect. It was exactly how God wanted it to be, and it operated by His ways. And it was a beautiful thing. Man and God had this incredibly intimate and close relationship. And so we're trying to get back to that. That's our ultimate goal as followers of God, is to get back to that. And that's the place that we're headed to as Christians. That place where we are with God, we dwell with Him, we relate very intimately and in His presence. And we have that in that perfect place where there is no sin, where there is no guilt, where there is no consequence, death, and all these other things that absolutely destroy our lives and make it miserable. All that stuff didn't exist in the world, Genesis 1 and 2. And so the Bible really covers two very different divisions, but that division took place at Genesis 3 and verse 6. Two totally different stories, or storylines as it were. All right, Genesis 1 and 2, we describe this as God in perfection, man in innocence. Genesis chapter 3 through 12, the background of redemption. It's there where we laid a good solid foundation of what redemption is built upon. Okay, without an understanding of what happened in those 10 chapters, the rest of it just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And so it's important for us, we spend a lot of time there understanding how it came to be of where we are today. Why Jesus? Why redemption? Why the cross? Why the law of Moses? Why this? Why that? It all is described there in Genesis 3:12. That answers the why. Okay, that's where we see sin entering the earth, where God starts to move and says, well, here's how I'm going to resolve this. We see the great flood. And even after the big divine reboot of the flood, sin was still a problem. God still had to get to Calvary. And so we define that as the background of redemption. And now we're here in Genesis chapters 12 through 50, redemption through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. This is when the wheels of redemption really start to roll, okay? And the journey to the cross really starts to gain traction and motion starts happening. All right, so we talked about here lately in this portion about the redemption through the patriarchs of God making three main promises to Abraham that really permeate the rest of Scripture and that are carried out through the rest of Scripture. The last one even to this very point in time. Okay, and those three main promises were that God would make a great nation from Abraham. And of course, we understand that as being the nation of Israel in the very physical sense. And that his descendants would receive the land of Canaan as an inheritance. And through Abraham, all the families and nations of the earth would be blessed. That includes you and I this very second. Okay, so this promise here is perpetually being carried out. You and I are benefactors of that promise, because it's through the line of Abraham that Jesus Christ came to the earth and has brought salvation to all of mankind. So that is this very second that promise is still being fulfilled. So God promised Abraham a child. After 10 years of nothing happening, Abraham takes matters into his own hands and Ishmael is born. And so we talked about that a little bit and how sometimes it's hard. You know, We feel like something is supposed to happen. We know that God has made promises to us. We know that God causes all good to happen and all this. We know all this stuff. And we have this general idea of how God operates in our lives. But we also know that sometimes it requires action on our part. Sometimes we just need to sit back and see what God does. But sometimes it's hard knowing that, especially when it comes to us. Because we want it resolved, and we want it resolved now. You know, and it's probably even more difficult in this American culture. You know, I mean, man, everything is just at our fingertips. You know, I got this phone in my pocket that 10, 20 years ago was just beyond our imagination. And the knowledge it brings to me at lightning speeds is just phenomenal. And so our lives are getting faster. The access to information is more demanding, and we get used to that. You know, it's kind of become to a point where I don't know what I'd do if I didn't have my phone. Because I use the thing for more than just talking to people. I use it to give me directions. You know, having to go to the old map, printed maps again, is just, you know. And you know, there was a time in this world, in this country, when not everybody just had an atlas in the back seat or in the back of the chariot, the carriage, whatever you want to call it, you know. I mean, technology grows. And things progress, and we get used to those things, and it, you know, and so as things progress for us, our demands become greater. Our demands for stuff to be now and fast, so we find our patience dwindling. Well, as we have seen thus far, just in the short handful of, you know, 20-something chapters we've made it through, God is patient. God is long-suffering. And that means that we, you know, God doesn't operate on our time scales. Okay, sometimes when God puts a plan into motion, it takes hundreds of years to happen. I want it to happen now. I want it to happen, you know, maybe a month from now. I might be able to go a month, you know. But that's just simply not the way it operates. And so we can understand where Abraham's coming from here. God says, hey, all these things are going to happen for you. I'm going to make a great nation from your descendants. Your descendants are going to get this land. And God, Abraham says, well, I have no child, so, okay, well, I guess I need to just make this thing happen. Well, clearly it's not going to happen with Sarah. She's a bit too old, and so they kind of toss that one out the door, and Sarah says, here, take Hagar. I guess this is the way it needs to happen. So Abraham just kind of starts taking things with his own hands, and Ishmael's born, and God says, no, no. All right. So we can understand that, you know, especially after 10 years. 10 years goes by, and things aren't happening that we think are supposed to be happening, and, well, we tend to start taking matters into our own hands, right? That can sometimes be a huge mistake. Sometimes we have to just learn to just sit and wait on the Lord. And it's hard. It will definitely challenge your faith. We also saw that circumcision was prescribed as a sign of the covenant that God made with Abraham, and this would carry on through the people of Israel all the way up until the cross. All right, last week we discussed the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. Something I wanted to point out that I failed to point out last week was that the city of Zoar was spared from destruction because Lot was there. And so if you remember the story, Lot lived in Sodom. The two angels came, they said, hey, here's what's going to happen, you need to get out of Dodge. And they said, head up to the mountains. And Lot says, no, if I go up to the mountains, that won't be cool. How about I go to this city over here? It's close enough by. And the angel says, all right, head over there, that's fine. But you need to go now, because I can't do anything until I know you've arrived there. And so when we read on through the passage, we saw that the city of Zoar was in the plains there. And it wasn't just Sodom and Gomorrah that, you know, just within the bounds of those cities where the fire came down destroyed. It was the entire plain there. That whole valley there was just completely and utterly wiped out because of the sin that was taking place there. But we see that Zoar was spared. And so it was spared because Lot was there. Nothing more. You know, we're never told that the people of Zoar there were some righteous people. You remember Abraham kind of had this going and back with the Lord. Well, what if you find this many? What if you find this many? He finally got down to 10 and said, well, what if you find 10 there? And God said, I won't destroy it on the count of 10. We're never told that there were 10 or more, or even 5, even 1 righteous person in Zoar. But yet it was spared because that's where Lot chose to go. What does that say to us? What does that say to us? You know, sometimes we stress over our own nation. You know, we get worked up about how things just seem to be going here in our own country. And rightly so. We should be concerned. We'd be foolish to not be concerned. But what does it say? What does this story say for us? What does it say for America? What does it say for the state of Florida? What does it say for Brevard, Rockledge, Titusville? You name it. What does this teach us? God is in control. What else? He's patient. God's taking care of His children, yeah. All right. Folks, our faithfulness, our righteousness, the way we live, okay, it has the power to change things. Now, this isn't to say that I'm a righteous man. Ain't nothing going to happen here because of me. That's not the mindset here, okay? The mindset is that God, our presence represents Jesus on earth. Okay? And Jesus taught a lot about this. You know, He talked about the parable, you know, the salt, you know, being the salt on the earth, that light on the hill, or that city up on the hill. You know, we can have, as Christians, as followers of God, we can have a preserving influence in our country, in our city, in our workplaces. And folks, I'm firmly convinced that God will bring blessings because of His children here. All right? And I think this is a great example. And when we really look down to it, you know, we're never told that Lot was just some crazy righteous guy. Maybe he was, you know, him being Abraham's nephew and all that. Maybe he was. But we're never told that. Self-centered?
Yeah. He wanted the best lamb.
Oh, yeah. This is true. Yeah.
There's nothing to say that he was exceptional.
Sure.
Even with Abraham, as you're pointing out there, God chose.
Yes. That's right. Abraham was simply God's chosen vessel. And when it really just comes down to it, Zoar was saved because of Lot, because of Abraham. All right? And so we gotta realize that. Abraham was God's chosen vessel. Are we not the same now? Is the church, are we as his people, not his chosen vessels to carry out his work here, to carry out his will? Yeah. And so we got to keep that in mind. We've got to let that drive us, just like it drove Abraham. Okay, God told Abraham to go, he went. We have to have that same mindset, that same attitude. God has told us a lot of things we need to be doing to preserve, to be that light. Okay, we've got to be going. We've got to be carrying out the mission. Bob?
Abraham must have known something because he told Lot not to go in the gates, camp on the outside. He did it for a while.
Sure. Okay. All right. So the major events of Abraham's life. He's 75 years old when he left Haran. This is when God originally came to him and said, "Hey, I want you to go." And so Abraham went, and the initial promises were given at age 75. At age 86, Ishmael was born. At age 99, Isaac was promised, and Abraham and Ishmael were circumcised, okay? So we see that there was a 25-year difference here. You know, 25 years is a long time for us, right? I mean, wow. 25 years, a lot of stuff can happen in 25 years. You look at what has happened just in our own lives over the past 25 years. I guarantee you, every last one of you can tell drastic changes, all right? And so a lot of stuff can happen in 25 years. But again, here we see that, you know, God's timeline ain't necessarily my timeline. You know, and so God says this is going to happen. Well, it didn't happen for another 25 years. And so we see Abraham there at 86, just 10 years into it, saying, "Well, I guess I need to make it happen." So 100 years at Abraham. When Abraham's 100, Isaac is born, and then Abraham dies at 175. All right, so I'm going to need a lot of reading tonight. If we can start here in Genesis chapter 18, 9 through 11. Abraham and Sarah are promised a child.
Then they said to him, "Where is Sarah, your wife?" And he said, "There in the tent." He said, "I will surely return to you at this time next year, and behold, Sarah, your wife, will have a son." And Sarah was listening at the tent door, which was behind him. Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years. Sarah was
all right, Genesis 18, verses 12 through 15. All right, so we see that Abraham and Sarah, they're promised a child, okay? And now we're moving on, and we start seeing the growth of Abraham's faith start to take place. So we're kind of skipping around here. The situation of Isaac being promised, or his son being promised to them, happened when they were Abraham was in his tents there at the Oaks of Mamre. And it was after that, that's when the whole Sodom and Gomorrah story happened. So now we're kind of picking back up where it left off. And so over in Genesis 15, verse 1, if you remember, I think we covered this a couple years ago, or a couple weeks ago. Yeah. God told Abraham, "Do not fear, I am a shield to you. Your reward will be very great." And so God tells Abraham this, yet now here we are coming up here in Genesis chapter 20. For the second time, he lies about Sarah being his wife, or his sister, or wife, okay? We already saw it happen once when he went down to Egypt. And now here he is coming into another kingdom of Gerar. And he once again tells the people, oh, this is my sister. And so the king Abimelech has Sarah brought to him. We're told later on, apparently, that Sarah was a very beautiful woman. And you know, Abraham was just aware of the fact that, hey, you look really nice, you look great. As soon as I come into these places, they're just going to kill me so they can have you. So let's just tell everybody, hey, you're my sister, and, you know, that way maybe I won't be killed. So the first time, it didn't go over too well with the Pharaoh, right? God handled that situation. You'd think Abraham would kind of learn his lesson through that one. Well, here we are again in Genesis 20. And he's doing it again. And so God comes to Abimelech in a dream, and he threatened him pretty seriously. I mean, God laid down some serious threats to Abimelech, if you go and read it there. And threatened him with death, calamity to his family and his house. And so Abimelech confronted Abraham about it. He's like, dude, what in the world is wrong with you? You're going to get me killed here. Why are you doing this? So then here in Genesis 20, we see Abraham's reasoning. He says, you know, what have you encountered that you've done this thing? Abimelech is not understanding why Abraham is just putting him in such jeopardy like this. And Abraham says, well, I thought surely there's no fear of God in this place, and you guys would kill me because of my wife. But she actually is my sister, the daughter of my father, but not the daughter of my mother, and she became my wife. So she was his half-sister. So, you know, we kind of see Abraham spinning a yarn here, right? Those are the worst lies, by the way. Yeah, have you ever had anybody tell you what, you know, it's one thing to be told a flat-out lie, right? But it's another thing when they give you part lie, part truth. Because that kind of leaves you scratching your head going, that sounds reasonable, that sounds plausible. Yeah, so kind of told a little half-truth there. And so, even though God had told Abraham that he would be a shield to him, Abraham still feared. What about us? If God came down and says, I'm going to be a shield to you, how would that make you feel? Would that make you just feel invincible? What do you think? I'm not going to make fun of you one way or the other.
I feel invincible. I think I'd still be scared.
Yeah? I would agree with you. I think I would be too. Yeah? Indeed. Anybody else? You know, when I read this, the first thing that came to my mind was this passage here, the Great Commission. You know, go into all the world, all authority. This is Jesus speaking. All authority has been given to me on heaven and on earth. Okay, that is a tremendous amount of authority. That puts him in complete and utter control over everything. Go, therefore, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them, teaching them to observe, and I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Is this not very similar to God saying, I'm going to be a shield to you? This is Jesus saying, I'm going to be with you. As you go, I'm going with you. But it's still a fearful thing, isn't it? What do you mean?
I mean, we can be afraid of a lot of things, but because we know God is with us, we step out on faith and do it anyway. We might be shaking the whole way.
Indeed. Yes. Yeah, you know, it's even Jesus was scared, right? I mean, you go read the scene about Jesus in the garden. I am telling you right now, I've had people disagree with me on it, amazingly, but I'm telling you, he was scared to death. Literally, the Bible says he was scared to death. He was terrified of what he was about to go through. God or not, he was man, full on. And he was terrified, but he went anyhow, you know? easily, hands down, the greatest example of faith from cover to cover that we have recorded. You know, here a man who is terrified of what he's about to go through, knowing full well what he's about to go through, but he went anyways.
All the time. He's promised to be with us.
Yes.
All the time. Not just part of the time, but all the time. And it's so easy for us to forget.
Yes. And this is sometimes more where faith comes in, right? You know, if I had some really hulked up military commando at my side, you know, full military gear, plenty of ammo and firepower to go around, that might make me feel a little better, huh? You know, I might be willing to wander into some dangerous places with this guy and be like, yeah, I ain't gonna mess with me. This guy will kill you. You know, that we tend to find comfort in those kinds of things. But it's tougher when it comes to knowing that God is there because we can't visibly see it, right? You know, we can't see Jesus walking by our side and say, yeah, I don't want to mess with me. I'm telling you, this guy will strike you blind. And all this kind of stuff, right? But yet, we can know that he is there. And in the times of my life where I have stepped out on faith, God's taken care of everything. He always has. But even still, to this day, I you know, it's hard to step through that door, but we got to. Bob?
When he says that, it's a commandment, too. He says, go therefore.
Yes.
And make disciples of all the nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father. That's a commandment.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a commandment. It is.
But I think it's just written there, but it's written there for a reason. It's another commandment.
It is indeed. Yeah. And probably one of the most crucial commandments we have, is it not? You know, I mean, of all the things Jesus said you need to be doing, this is kind of the biggie here. I would dare say this one probably outweighs anything, any other commands that we have of thou shalt. All right, so Isaac is born. Genesis 21, 1 through 4. I'm going to need a lot of reading here. Feel free, just take off. All right, verses 5 through 8. All right.
Ten
years younger, is that right? Yeah, I thought it was somewhere between the 80s and 90s.
In fact, more of the woman bearing children in an old age than a man. You know, we have men today that are 75 years old that have a child from a 40-year-old woman.
Yeah. Oh, sure, yeah. Yeah, and which is why, you know, we saw in that earlier passage in Genesis 15 where it says that Sarah laughed. She did. You know, here's God saying, hey, you're going to have a kid next year. You're right. Whatever. You know, she laughed at it. And as a woman my age, really, God, are you serious? I'm far beyond childbearing years. But then we see the Lord was so funny. I didn't laugh. What? I didn't laugh, huh? Oh, yeah, you did. Is anything too great for God? Right? Yeah, we like to put God in that box, don't we? You know, God, there's a nice little box. God's in there, and yeah, it all works. And as long as he stays in that box, everything's fine. But boy, when God starts coming out that box, that's when things start getting squirrely for us, right? Sometimes we need to take God out of our box and leave him out. We'll see far greater things happen if we stop trying to shove God in our little box, you know, and see what all he can do in our lives. All right, so Hebrews 11, 11 through 12 says, by faith, even Sarah herself received ability to conceive, even beyond the proper time of life, since she considered him faithful who had promised. Therefore, there was born even of one man, and him as good as dead at that, as many descendants as the stars of heaven in number, and innumerable as the sand which is by the seashore. And we've looked at these passages before. In all of these passages, we see these promises being made. They were made to Abraham, they were made to Isaac, and the same promises were made to Jacob. The same exact ones. Sands of the seashore, innumerable. Stars of the heaven, innumerable. So will be your descendants. And we see that verified by the Hebrew writer. Very same things. And this again kind of goes in line and hand in hand with what we've been talking about, that this is a book of harmony. Okay? This writing in Hebrews was written thousands of years after the promises were given. All right? The promises were given before they were even penned in the book of what we know as the book of Genesis. But yet it all harmonizes. Written by multiple men. Genesis written by a man who did not even receive these promises or encounter these promises. But yet it all flows. And that's what makes this book so awesome. That's one of the things about this book that just makes it special and makes it different than any other religious book that man wants to pick up and read and try to get some kind of existential information out of. You know, this book right here just is amazing. And it is head and shoulders above any other religious documents that tell us how to live life and how to find God and how to find things to better our lives. This book is wonderful, and I love these things. I love to see the connections from long ago to now. It's wonderful. So we see those promises reiterated over and over and over, and the Hebrew writer mentioned them as well. All right, so we now see Abraham's faith maturing. I'm going to move quickly through this just for time's sake. So it came about after these things, God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Now remember, at this time, Abraham's faith had kind of been faltering some, right? You know, God had told him, made him a lot of promises, told him a lot of things, and yet we see him still afraid to walk into these towns, even though God says, I am going to be a shield to you. All right? We finally start to see Abraham's faith mature. And this is an important thing for us, folks. Faith is a process. All right, nobody comes out of that baptistry right there just zapped with faith, you know, pinging with faith to the brim. It just doesn't happen that way. All right, now we do see some people come out of those waters, I mean, absolutely on fire, and then, man, they start changing lives immediately out of the steps, okay? But 9 times out of 10, faith is a growing process. It starts at some point, and as we go through life, as we experience things, as we step out on faith, it grows, and it grows, and it becomes more solidified. And we see that happening here with Abraham. So God tested Abraham, and he said to him, Abraham, and Abraham said, here I am. He says, take now your son, your only son, whom you love, Isaac, and go to the land of Moriah, and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I will tell you. What? You know, this passage right here messes up a lot of people. People don't make sense of this. God told Abraham to go kill his son and burn him? Are you kidding me, Kirk? You expect me to follow that kind of a God? You expect me to put my hope in a book that has this kind of stories in it? You're crazy. But Abraham rose early in the morning and saddled his donkey and took two of the young men with him and Isaac his son. He split wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. Interesting. We don't see him arguing with the Lord here, do we? You know, God says, here's what I'm going to do to Sodom and Gomorrah. Oh, hold on, Lord. Let's talk about this. Here, go burn your son on the altar.
Okay.
We see Abraham growing, don't we? So Abraham arose early in the morning, saddled his donkey, took the men. He split the wood for the offering. He arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And on the third day, that's the thing too, this was a long journey. You know, could you imagine what must have been going through Abraham's mind for 3 solid days traveling to this place, knowing what was about to take place? What would be going through your head? On the third day, Abraham raised his eyes and saw the place from a distance. Abraham said to the young men, stay here with the donkey, and I and the lad will go over there, and we will worship, and who will return? We will return to you. Boy, what a statement. Abraham's going over here with the full intent of killing his son and burning him to death on an altar. Yet he says, but we're going to come back to you. Wow. Abraham took the wood of the burnt offering and laid it on Isaac his son, and he took in his hand the fire and the knife. So the two of them walked on together, and Isaac spoke to Abraham his father and said, hey dad, behold the fire and the wood, but where is the lamb for the burnt sacrifice or the burnt offering? And Abraham said, God will provide for himself the lamb of the burnt offering, my son. So the two of them walked on together. Now, what do you think Isaac was going through his head, you know? Dad, you kind of got a crazy look in your eye there, Dad. I see you got all the stuff for the altar, but, you know, where's the living thing we're supposed to put on there? An actual sacrifice. And then they came to the place of which God had told him, and Abraham built the altar there and arranged the wood and bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Abraham stretched out his hand and took the knife to slay his son, but the angel of the Lord called to him from heaven and said, Abraham, Abraham. He said, here I am. He said, do not stretch out your hand against the lad and do nothing to him, for now I know that you fear God, since you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me. And Abraham raised his eyes and looked, and behold, behind him a ram caught in the thickets by the horns. Abraham went and he got the ram and he made the sacrifice. I don't understand that. That doesn't make sense to me. If y'all can bear with me for a few more minutes. That doesn't make sense to me, folks. I don't know that I could do that to my son. If I'm just going to be flat out honest with you. Even after everything Abraham had been through, he was planning on killing his son. Had him bound up, knife in hand. That is huge, huge faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises was offering up his only begotten son. It was he to whom it was said, and Isaac, your descendant, shall be called. Abraham considered that God is able to raise people even from the dead. That was what was in Abraham's head. He went there full well knowing that he was going to kill his son and that God was going to raise him up and bring him back to life because God had said through him, all these things are going to happen. Folks, that is unbelievable faith. To my knowledge, Abraham had never seen God bring anybody back from the dead or anything of such miraculous nature that I can recall in the story up till now. But yet he had faith that God would do that. Then as it goes on, God reiterates the promises. I will greatly multiply your seed as the stars of the heaven, the sands which is on the seashore. Your seed shall possess the gate of their enemies. That's going to be talking about the land of Canaan. And in your seed all the nations of the earth shall be blessed because you have obeyed my voice. So he reiterates the promises for about the third or fourth time. He's coming in and said, I'm going to do this for you. And sure enough, you remember as they were headed up to that mountain, Isaac said, well, Dad, where's the sacrifice? And Abraham said, the Lord will provide. And indeed he did, folks. Indeed he did. He did not stop the hands of those who were putting a crown of thorns on his son's head. He did not stop the hands of those who were raising the flogs to beat his only son. He did not stop the hammers that were raised to drive in the nails into the body of his son. And he did not stop the hands of the soldier who lifted a spear and thrust it into Jesus' side on the cross. He didn't stop those hands, folks. The sacrifice of Isaac was a foreshadowing of what was to come. And you and I can sit here and put ourselves in Abraham's shoes and say, you know what, I just couldn't do that. But God did. He did that for me. He did that for you. He didn't stop the hands for his only son. And folks, that needs to change our lives. That's a big deal. That shows how much love he has for us. Abraham spoke truly thousands of years ago, the Lord will provide, son. The Lord will provide. Abraham had no idea what truth he was speaking. Because the Lord did provide. Many thousands of years later, he did, and he didn't stop the hands that time. He sat there and watched as he put his only son through it for you and for me. And folks, that needs to change our lives. All right. Sorry. So next week, we'll discuss a little bit more about the life of Isaac, and then we'll start to talk about redemption, carry on through Isaac and Jacob, and moving on from there. Hope you all have a good rest of the week.